It's OMF on EEI.
All right, back here on OMF. If you are tuning in right now to hear Red Sox baseball, no game today. Had nothing to do with the weather. Actually, the weather wasn't bad out there. They were expecting a little bit of rain, but it wasn't bad. They postponed it out of respect for the tragic events that occurred yesterday in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, and following the additional details in this evolving situation. They decided it was in the best interest of the fans and the staff and the players and the community not to play today's game. Since then, the Timberwolves game has been postponed, and then the Wild game has been postponed. So three of the teams that were playing here today, all of those games are postponed. Question we all have is, what does it mean for the rest of this series? The Red Sox are scheduled to play tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, and Thursday afternoon. There was some talk that maybe they would move the series, pick it up the series, and move it to Boston. Have the guys fly to Boston. The Twins are going to the West Coast, playing in L.A. and then in Oakland right after that. And so we thought there was a possibility they would move them, but the latest of what we're hearing now out of the Twins organization is, nope, they are planning on seeing if they can play these games.
All right. And I like it. All right. Yeah, so, okay, well, no. I guess, listen.
But I'm not optimistic about that. Are you?
Me neither. But they also have the weather as a built-in excuse. So if, you know, if things do go wrong, I mean, I guess they can afford to, you know, to burn two down, like make up two, as instead of, I don't think the entire series is going to be a washout, like a washout, you know, rain-wise, figuratively and, you know, naturally. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, let's see what happens tonight in the streets, and then you'll have a better idea.
Hey, because, 7 o'clock curfew.
Yeah, I know. And if it gets ugly tonight, I'm not sure that prediction will hold up of these four games. That
largest police force in Minnesota history. That's what the governor says. Well, hey, we'll see. Minnesota. We'll see. I'm sure it's going to be horseback. And here's the other thing. I'm sure they've been prepping for this and training for this. And, you know,
well, with the trial going on, yes, no question. Yeah. Mm. But the latest incident and the latest shooting on Sunday, I think, changes everything. It just escalates the emotions. And so I'm not sure they can get these games in because of that. So if it were just the trial, maybe, you know, the defense, you know, now steps up and people are maybe watching it from afar, or maybe even close up, but you've got no decision this week. You're not going to get that decision. But now that you've got this latest shooting yesterday, I think all bets are off, Kirsten.
Yeah,
Two games. Wednesday, Thursday, noon games in Minnesota. We'll see. That's what I think they can do.
Yeah, let's see. No fans.
Think of all that work. Make up all that work later. Think of all the, like, the momentum that the Sox were getting, and just how much excitement, and like, wow, let me tune in and see what the Sox were up to. So the first opportunity, I think, that people are like, wow, what an unbelievable weekend. What an unbelievable turn of events. Six straight wins, and not just barely doing it. Some, yeah, they were close, but then just a complete beatdown yesterday. Tons and tons and tons of runs. Tons of home runs.
Well, the biggest problem they had yesterday is they ended up still going to the bullpen. That was their biggest problem.
Just the game. I knew, like, in that fifth inning yesterday, I knew it was like, all right, wow, they just put up a bunch of runs. This game's going to last forever. It's going to last forever because, okay, you know, the Orioles, like, I don't know how many pitchers they use, but damn.
The Orioles pitch and blows, especially at that ballpark. I mean, you know, and some of the home runs, once you get that starter out of the game, Lopez has absolutely nothing. They got one starter, means, you know, Harvey was okay. That was at Thursday, but they got to him. No, I just think that they're 6-3. People can talk about the Orioles all they want. This team probably normally would be 4-5, but they've come back, and they've shown fight. They've shown excitement. You know, they're swinging the bats. Their pitching is good enough, or has been so far. The biggest question you had all year. I'm not saying it's electric. Richards was a little bit better. The nut line was a lot better, but he was a little bit better. Something to grow on. Pavetta, he gives it up, but then executes, makes big pitches when he wants. I just feel like in that locker room, you know, you watch the games, and they just look like they're having fun. They believe they can come back. They believe they can win some games. And it's kind of all you really wanted. And I think they're good. You know, I think they're a good team. I was looking forward to this series. I thought today was going to be an awful matchup for them anyway. Yeah. Now, I don't know if Perez gets bumped, but Perez versus Hap, I wasn't crazy about their chances today. But We'll see if that's the same matchup if they resume play at all this week. Who knows?
All right, we're waiting for Jack Edwards. We want to talk a little Bruins hockey, and the Bruins yesterday just destroyed in that game against the Flyers. But they have made a couple of deals. Mike Riley is here. Taylor Hall is here. I mean, what are they getting, Hall? Based on what they gave up absolutely nothing. And matter of fact, the Sabres are paying for most of his the remaining part of the year. He is a rental player. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He was awful with Buffalo. I mean,
yeah,
he was awful.
When you think about, like you mentioned, what they gave up. I mean, there was a couple trades already went down. Was it Nick Foligno and David Savard? They got first-round picks back in return. You give up a second-round pick, 2021, and Anders Bjork. A guy that
he was doing
you've seen a lot of, and it's just sort of like it's kind of going nowhere. So, to me, Taylor Hall, I don't think that he just all of a sudden sucks. This guy was the league MVP in 2018.
Yep.
You remember him back with Sagan? What was it, 2010 draft?
He was the number one draft
Sagan
pick.
Sagan went two.
Taylor Hall was.
But it's like a gamble worth taking. You gave up nothing. I still think the guy's a good player. He's in Buffalo. They suck. They're miserable. I have no idea why he would sign there in the first place. Apparently the Bruins were close to signing him in the offseason. And you got a guy, a chance to look at him for 30, 40 games and finally figure out if you got someone that can play in that second line with Krejci. I don't know Krejci's future here either. But I think it's a nice gamble. If he likes playing here, I don't think he's going to cost $8 million given the year he's having. But you never know. He could turn it around. But I think it's a good move for them.
See, the crazy thing is how early this deal was done. Like, this deal was done over a week ago. Like, so there were plenty of options. So when you're looking at the grades, you're looking at what the Sabres, what's going on with Buffalo and what they're saying about it and how angry some of their local beat writers and some of their fans are based on the fact that all they got was a second-round pick. And it's like they didn't wait until the last minute because it's almost like the Bruins took advantage of a depressed market. Sound familiar? We're actually able to do something, you know, and, you know, capitalize on a buy low opportunity, which I thought was pretty impressive just overall. Now, the thing is that the other thing that stands out to me is, all right, so now we're going to dive into the analytics of why this is a great deal for the Bruins. Okay, so, yeah, it's not that he's a bad player. It's that he was stuck on a crappy team.
Yeah.
It's not that he's a bad player. It's that he didn't have anyone good around him. And I do like the fact that the dude flat out says, listen, I've been playing like crap lately, and I'd love a new opportunity. He just flat out said, I'm not playing good. Like, you never hear people admit that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd buy some of the – and I've seen all these analytics of you know, puck rush and all this other stuff, and I have no clue about that stuff. But the guy has 2 goals in 37 games. So maybe he was miserable. Maybe that was part of it. Maybe he realized he made a mistake. He took a 1-year deal for $8 million to go to Buffalo. He could have gone elsewhere. My guess is the Bruins weren't offering him $8 million for 1 year. He decided on going there, and maybe he was just pissed off at the whole situation. But 2 goals in 37 games? And he's got Eichel on that team. I mean, he's got players around him, right? I mean, not great players, but, you know, he's got a line that's halfway decent. I don't understand it. And, as Lou said, he's not that old. So it's a matter of he still should be able to perform. Maybe with a new team, he changes and his whole attitude becomes much different. And he gives you enough in the next couple months, and then they have to make a decision in the offseason.
Well, you mentioned some of those numbers. I think this year he's like, you know, 2.3% of his shots are goals. And his career average is like 10%. So you mentioned it. He's a goal scorer. Like, you just forget how to score. You know, so I think that's why I think the upside here is tremendous for what the Bruins have acquired. You know, and you might actually have somebody that can play with Krejci, probably Craig Smith. I don't know what that line thinks it's going to play out. We can ask Jack here whenever he joins here at 3:15.
4:15.
So, 4:15, that's what I meant. And the other one, too, Mike Riley. I mean, it's just they just needed a body. You know, I mean, they played that last game the other night, and they had nobody. I mean, Grizzlick's out, Carlo's out, McAvoy's out, Miller's out. And it's like they needed some depth there at the blue line. There's no question about it. They got a guy that's been in the league for a while.
Yeah.
So that was we need a body. We need some more defensemen. So I think he did a pretty good job. You know, I think he went out there, and Cassidy, I think, needs some help at the blue line. There's no question about it. So Donnie Sweeney goes out there, gives him a guy that's been in the league for a while. You know, gives him potentially, you know, high upside guy that can play in the second line. I like it.
No, I think they're active. They realize that they've got some issues here. There's no question about it. You could see a lot of those issues yesterday in that game. They couldn't get the puck out of their own zone, and we'll get into some of the goaltending problems because you do not know what the situation is with Tuukka Rask other than he apparently is going to come back soon. What does that mean? He came back the last time, and they lasted, what, half of the first period? So you don't know what you're going to get there. All right, we have got in communication with Jack, and Jack will join us coming up next right here on OMF. All right, back here on OMF, according to Ian Rappaport, the Patriots have terminated the contract of wide receiver Julian Edelman. Per the wire, he's listed as a failed physical. Kind of what we thought last week, guys, when the report came out, Karen Garigian had it, that he wasn't going to be able to play all of the games. It's kind of, you know, giving you an idea that if he wasn't going to play the games, he's probably not going to be on the team. Again, the rap sheet reporting the Patriots have terminated the contract of Julian Edelman. And we'll get into that more in a few minutes after we talk with our buddy Jack Edwards, who joins us live right now on the Harbor One Hotline. Hello, Jack.
How are you doing, Glenn?
Good, Jack. How are you?
I'm buoyed by the acquisition of Taylor Hall.
Let's start there, Jack. I want to ask you about this because we just were talking about it. They got him for virtually nothing, all right? And Buffalo is going to pay some of his money. He's got two goals in 37 games, so maybe he's not the same player. Maybe he was disgruntled up there in Buffalo, thought he made a major mistake. But why so cheap? Why weren't other teams interested in a guy that was an MVP not that long ago?
I couldn't tell you that, but the Bruins are gambling on the notion that at age 29 and having played only about a dozen playoff games in his career, I think the total is 14 if you include the bubble games. I think the Bruins are gambling on the fact that he's had a whiff of his mortality, and as a former number one overall draft choice, he's going to empty his buckets on every shift and see what happens. You know, finally, David Krejci has a guy with bona fide pedigree, and the Bruins are hoping that Taylor Hall can recapture some of the magic that led New Jersey, an undermanned team, to the playoffs in 2018 and won Hall the Hart Trophy as the MVP of the league.
Yeah, Jack, listen, I like the deal too because I don't think he gave up much. But and we've been talking about before, they only played the Sabres once this year. You know, I know they probably can't wait to play the Sabres, right, because they've been so bad. But in that one, actually a couple of games, I'm sorry. But what have you seen from Taylor Hall that makes you feel like it won't work, or what do you see that it makes you feel like it will?
Well, yeah, I am skeptical because of the Nick Ritchie effect. You know, the Bruins got Nick Ritchie at the deadline or near the deadline, I can't recall exactly, last year. But he showed up and had been playing on a team that was clearly out of it for at least 2 months, and he had lost his edge. You know, Lou, and this goes for all major league sports. If you're on a team that is going nowhere, you cannot get that 100% commitment out of yourself. It's the rare athlete that can get that out of himself on a losing team. Buffalo, since the end of January, we know has been going nowhere. And can Taylor Hall arrive in tip-top physical condition and be ready to commit to the kind of play that the Bruins need out of him? You know, he is a power wing when he is healthy and playing at his best. But, you know, easier said than done. A power wing is expected to haul guys along with him as he rushes up the ice and go through defensemen, not around them. And Taylor Hall, at his best, can be a Lucic type of presence without the fisticuffs, but an intimidating force on the ice with his speed and power. But, you know, That remains to be seen. You know, it's time to put it up.
What about Lazar and Mike Riley? How do you feel? What do you feel like those guys are going to fit into the lineup?
You know, they're both incomplete players, but Lazar is settled into his energy role now that he's been a veteran in the NHL. He's going to wear number 20. And remember Riley Nash, you know, great guy in the room, hustled conscientiously on the back check, didn't provide a whole lot of offense until his contract year when he hit the jackpot and hasn't come close to it since, and, in fact, got dealt again today to Toronto. I see Curtis Lazar as a similar player who can move up to the third line center position if necessary, can play wing willingly, will hustle all the time, gets in the odd scrap, can aggravate opponents, but we shouldn't look for him to provide much offense. He's a consistent, energetic, skilled player. So that may help the fourth line get an identity, which it really hasn't had in the last couple of seasons. As for Mike Riley, he's a really good puck retriever, makes a very good first pass, is excellent in the attacking zone, not so good at taking on big forwards, limited in his ability to win pucks along the boards, but in the right situation with the right partner, he can add to the breakout skills of this team, especially Lauzon and Zboril, the rookie left-side defensemen, have had real problems. And in the last 3 weeks or so, they've had really a tough time getting the puck out of the defensive zone. Riley will help with that, him being a left shot.
I was going to say, you could use a little bit of that yesterday, Jack. We're talking to Jack Edwards of Nesson. All right, I want to ask you about your concern about the goaltending situation. Tuukka Rask supposedly is coming back, but we saw what happened the last time he came back. We've seen three games now with Jeremy Swayman. I really like this kid, and you know, you've seen this before in the NHL. You bring a goaltender up late in the season, he gets hot, and he can be hot in the playoffs. It does happen. Or how concerned are you, and where do you think they're going to end up going here?
Well, first of all, I'm very concerned because Tuukka has played exactly 20 minutes in the last month plus, and he went off the ice clutching his lower back. The team, like all NHL teams, is not disclosing exactly what's wrong with his back, or in fact, that it is actually his back, which we all believe it to be. Back injuries and goaltenders don't go along well. That Rask is healthy and available to the Bruins for the entire playoffs is a prerequisite of anybody who has Stanley Cup drifting through their dreams. This team has yet to prove that it can really bear down and roll off victory after victory. They've won two games in a row twice in their last 25 games. That's not the posture that they want. Rask will give the team the confidence to take chances up ice, and he's the best goalie in the franchise, and you got to have him ready for the playoffs. He skated today, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. We thought he was coming back once, and he lasted one period.
Jack, let me ask you about that, because the future of Tuukka Rask is still kind of unknown, and I'm just curious. You mentioned Jeremy Swayman. Does that play a role in it? Do you like this kid? Is he, like, the next guy, or does that push Tuukka out of here?
Oh, I'm really, really high on Jeremy Swayman, and so is Bruins management. When they got this kid to sign out of the University of Maine, Orono, they knew they had something special. He won the Mike Richter Award as the best goaltender in American college hockey last season. And his ability to stay calm at important moments to read the game. He comes off his line so aggressively. He got caught on it once in his last start, but I'll take that, and I'll accept that. The question is it too much too soon? Because Philadelphia is feeling the downside of that with Carter Hart, who was greeted as the savior of the franchise, the best goalie since Ron Hextall, and they were keeping him in the AHL to let him season and get that needed professional experience, and they brought him up and he lit it up, and this year he hit a wall and was terrible for 3 weeks, and Philadelphia has yet to recover from that slump. So you don't want to waste a goalie's career by hurrying him. So I think the Bruins will be very careful with Swayman. They know they've got a really solid pro in Daniel Vladar, who was hung out to dry last night. Nobody's holding that game against him. So the Bruins have put themselves in a position where if Tuukka Rask plays to the end of this contract at the end of this season and wants to retire or wants to move on or wants more money than the franchise thinks he's worth, they're in a position of strength. But I would hesitate to rush Swayman unless he convinces absolutely everybody that he's ready.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because you mentioned like end of the year, depending on what he wants to do. The question, obviously, with David Krejci is somewhat similar, right? What does he want to do? Yeah. I've heard maybe he wants to go back to Czechoslovakia, maybe finish his career there. Who knows? But adding a guy like Taylor Hall, is that sort of like, okay, we're going to give you a talented winger and let's sort of see, you know what I mean? Like, if you're worth investing long-term, does that play a role in it at all with Krejci?
Yeah, I think it does. He's a guy who's very satisfied with his financial position in life. I think he's made way more money than he ever anticipated making. I'm not saying that he's going to sign for a bargain price when his contract runs out at the end of this season, but I think his desire to play is what's going to drive the next deal. Does he want to finish his career with the Boston Bruins? He said exactly that to me when we were sitting down for one of those My Story programs that Nesson does. And he expressed the desire to play his entire NHL career for the Boston Bruins. As you mentioned, that can be a double-edged sword. You know, the Czech League isn't the NHL, but it's where he grew up and home. And where he still, where he still has a lot of relatives. So the rest of this season and the playoffs, I hope, will reveal to David Krejci where he wants to go in the rest of his hockey career.
All right, Jack, we're going to learn a lot about the team, I think, in the next 3 weeks. I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road. Have a good one.
All right, Jack. Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Jack.
Jack Edwards on the Harbor One Hotline. And the breaking news again, Julian Edelman apparently has failed a physical. Therefore, the New England Patriots have terminated his contract. What is next for Julian Edelman? We get to it next right here on OMF.
Follow him on Twitter at Christian Fourier.
I heard you hate old people and puppies. Nope, just puppies. Hate puppies.
It's OMF on WEEI.
I've been following Adam Schefter's Twitter account pretty carefully over the last 6 months, and he always uses this exact phrase about your knee. Julian Edelman underwent a precautionary standard knee procedure this morning. What's a precautionary standard knee procedure?
That one baffled me too. I don't know. I don't know who's leaking all these things, but Scheffner. Yeah, he's got me on.
Was it preemptive knee surgery? Because that's what it sounds like he said there.
I don't know what he was trying to sound. I had to go in and get some stuff taken out. I don't think anytime you go into your knee, it's a good thing, you know. But Scheffner, he's got his ways of putting everything.
Are you feeling okay?
He's always right. I'm getting there, man.
So that's Julian Edelman back in January. The Patriots have terminated his contract, listed as a failed physical. And it's kind of interesting because we saw the Karen Garigian piece the other day that she had it that he would not be able to play the full 16 games. In retrospect, now looking back at that, you say,
it was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, she got it from somebody in the Patriots because something was going on internally within the organization. And I think Mike Giardi might have hit on him. His tweet here 11 minutes ago, there were some in the Patriots organization who were hoping Julian Edelman would retire so he could have a cleaner ending in New England. Massive amount of respect for where Edelman came from and how good he became at a position he didn't start playing until the pros. And then he says this could be a procedural move to make that retirement happen now. In other words, force him to retire because who's going to pick him up? I mean, people are saying Tampa Bay, well, if he failed a physical here, and yeah, they already have Scotty Miller, what are they picking up Julian Edelman?
No, this isn't no. Yeah. No, he's done. Say,
this isn't Edelman from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't know why they would do it then, right? Because he's playing at a high level, joining a Super Bowl defending champion Tampa Bay Bucks. You know, that, oh, my God, he definitely makes our team better. This is a guy that, you know, if he was healthy, like I said, 2 or 3 years ago, there's no question he helps them. But now, given the situation with him health-wise and his knee, no. I mean, they have Scotty Miller. Like, right now, Scotty Miller in his prime is not as good as Edelman, but physically, he probably is right
well,
now.
Yeah, no, to me, it's so looks like he's done. Nothing official yet from him, but it, all signs lead to the fact that he will no longer be playing football for any team. Because if he failed the physical for the Patriots, there's no way anybody else is going to pass him on a physical and give him any guaranteed money. At that point, why would you even do it? To me, he's done. So, and then I just get into just, okay, you know, impact on the team. Where do you rank him? You know, it's as far as players that left an unbelievable impact on
this team.
He's a
red jacket guy. That's what he is.
Well, he's definitely a red jacket guy, but I do think there's like
just for that catch
ranking system.
The Falcons.
Here's the weird thing with him. I don't think he'll ever get credit for the actual impact that he had on the team. There's still, in my opinion, this weird like, well, you know, he's still not as good as Troy Brown. He's still not as good as, you know,
Wes
some
Welker.
Of these.
Oh, I don't know
Wes
about
Welker.
That.
No, I'm just saying, that. Listen, I feel like there's still this, well, Welker was better because Welker's numbers are better.
Yeah, but Welker dropped a
again,
pass, we remember.
So,
and people don't let him forget about that.
I disagree with you.
I think Edelman, because of the big moments in postseason games, is going to be revered as one of those great receivers.
He
above
should
those
be,
guys you
he
were talking
should be
about.
The best receiver or second ever in the Patriots uniform as far as what he did, what he was able to accomplish as far as wide receivers, not lumping any other players. But and I would even say he has a really good case for number one based on Super Bowls, plays that he made in the Super Bowl, just overall, just grittiness, toughness, where he started. I mean, it's remarkable what he has accomplished on this team.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this before we, because we have plenty of time to get into where his place is or whatever. Why don't you think he would come out and retire?
What do you mean? Why? What do you mean? Why wouldn't he come?
Well,
out
if the Patriots organization, if they were hoping that they could get him to retire, as opposed to what they ended up doing today, and that is basically cutting him.
Well,
in
don't
the
you
end,
think
he's going to retire, right?
Well, this don't you think it was a timing thing? I mean, was it an off-season bonus that was coming his way? That you know what I mean? So it's just like, well, you know, before we do anything here, we want to test you out. Right now, you're not physically ready, so we're out. You know, so I don't know. Maybe in 2 months from now, maybe he feels like, okay, I'm not ready right now because I need another month. You guys made your decision. Fine. You don't want to give me this little off-season bonus, whatever it might be. And in another month or so, I think I will be healthy. I think I can pass a physical for another football team. And I'm not ready to retire yet. I want to come back from this. I've worked my ass off to rehab. I'm not done.
Yeah, that does kind of – that is curious. If the bonus is tied to it, then, you know, force them to make a decision on your career and then just retire afterwards because – If older players have taught us anything, is that if you're one of those red jacket guys, they're going to be upfront and honest with you. Hey, Teddy Bruschi, probably not going to make our team. You should probably think about hanging up. Oh, really? Because I was planning on playing, but now okay, so fine. I don't want to play for another team, so I'm just going to call it quits and be done. But this one probably had something to do with that bonus. right? I mean, because if you thought he was going to be healthy, or maybe you just said, you know, we brought in so many wide receivers knowing that you weren't going to be healthy. Because even before this happened, okay, where does he fit in? If you signed two tight ends, you signed a bunch of wide receivers, you have younger guys that are on the roster that are going to take a roster spot, where does he belong? What's his role? And especially if he's going to be a situational guy that isn't going to be out there every single down, unless you Kevin Falk him or you know Anthony Pleasant him and just keep him on the roster around. That's what I really thought they were going to do.
Yeah, you did. You said that
save
last
a spot
week.
For him. And just kind of keep him around because he's valuable, you know, and you're still paying him, but you just want him in. A whole new group of guys coming in to play for the Patriots. They need someone to kind of lean on.
I just don't think his chances are great that he's going to grab on with another team right now. Would you sign him right now? What's that?
Would you sign him?
No.
No guarantees whatsoever. No.
Zero guarantees.
No. Well, we know that the slot receiver doesn't have great value out there. So the money he's going to make in the open market is going to be veterans minimum, right?
And the money won't matter. Maybe incentives. I mean, and that's why the money, he doesn't care about the money right now. You know, I would think if he's interested in playing, it's because, you know, he had this surgery, busted his ass. He's trying to get back to play, right? And he's just, I'm rehabbing to try to get it to 100%, and if I can get through that, I don't know. In the back of his mind, he just might be busting his ass to try to play another football game, and he wants to. So I don't think it's going to be about money. If he thinks he can play, he'll try to sign on somewhere. He don't care about guarantees, just to go out there and try to play. That's all, right?
Yeah, it sounds to me, and I think it now that you look back at the Karen Garigian piece, it makes a lot more sense based on what Giardi is tweeting out there, and that is that they wanted him to retire. That was what they wanted to do because they like him, and this would be the perfect way to separate. It's a retirement. You're forever a New England Patriot. You're going to get the red jacket down the road.
Let me give you this one.
He resisted that.
From our boy Miguel, right, which we all know he's a cap guy,
yep.
Whatever.
Yep.
He just tweeted this, said, by terminating his contract now, the Patriots have made Julian Edelman eligible for the injury protection benefit, which could pay him $2 million in September. 1.2 would count against the cap. 800 would be considered a benefit. So is there a chance by doing it now they did him a favor?
Maybe.
Under this collective bargaining weird salary cap thing, whatever, that these people know about?
Yeah,
so hold on.
There is
a rule. So, like, if you're under contract and you get cut with years remaining on your contract, then the team that cut you still has to pay you for a full year at a prorated number unless somebody else signs you. So you can actually be on the team. You could be sitting at home receiving a paycheck, and then you'll get paid for the first 2-3 weeks. As soon as you sign another team that cuts you because of an injury is now off the hook, and now they don't have to pay you anymore. But if I remember this rule correctly, a lot of guys don't get it. Because it's everything has to be perfect. Like, you have to have years remaining, you have to have a salary. But if they cut you per a physical or because of injury, that team owes you a prorated portion of your salary. Because I got it. I got it when I, when I left Washington. They cut me because of an injury, and I was going to get paid whether I played or not. But then Carolina called me up, so I got paid for 1 week. I got paid for 1 week. Sure enough, the Washington was off the hook, and the Carolina paid me an unguaranteed contract, which I just assumed I was going to get. And there's some risk there too. So
yeah, I think there's something. There could be something to that they were trying to, you know, help him a little bit. I just don't think that.
Well, I don't think it's them. But I got to look into that because they're not doing them. If this rule still exists, and I got to look it up. They have to. They're not doing, we're going to do you a solid. No, that's the way the rule is. Like, if you are cut with years remaining and you still have a salary in place, that team still has to pay you.
Well, I get that, but that would be the difference of why he would not retire, correct?
Well, no,
because retirement, you wouldn't get that.
You don't officially. Yeah, you're not going to sit there and go, yeah, you're still looking for a job.
Yeah, well, we're trying to figure why he didn't retire and why they're doing this.
Because he wants to play.
Right.
I mean, that's one option,
right?
It could be that he's
going to get that money with the injury. That's a possibility, too.
Well, no, because here's the thing. So I remember what happened to me. I was like, well, I mean, listen, it's a win-win situation. I can sit there I can rehab, I can train, I can try and get a job. If somebody offers me something that is significant that just gets me on a team so I get that extra year also, then I'm going to play. But if it's one of these things where, hey, we're gonna hire you and fire you, hire you and fire you, then it makes no sense for you to play because you make more money by not playing.
Makes sense. No, it does make sense.
So, no, so he's if he does still want to play and he wants to take his chances and maybe he thinks a good opportunity will come up, and then he will you wait till the end of 2021 football season to go ahead and say that you're going to retire.
Well, can we just say this? I'm kind of seeing it all over Twitter right now. We mentioned it before. Julian Edelman, red jacket guy, no question, Patriots Hall of Famer, right?
Yes.
He is not an NFL Hall of Famer.
He is not.
Oh my
he
God!
Is
stop.
Not.
No, those are him. Those are fanboys.
There's people
that
tweeting
are doing
left
that.
And right. This guy's a Hall of. We absolutely love him. I love him to death.
Has he ever made a Pro Bowl?
Patriot Hall of Famer. He is not. He is a great clutch. You know, he's great in the postseason. He's not. He's not an NFL Hall of Famer.
Has he ever made a Pro Bowl?
We're going to get a lot of that, and I'm sure in the next few days he's not, in my opinion. And I don't know the case that he is, other than he's on your team and was great in the playoffs.
During the Patriots' last Super Bowl run, John Fox, a longtime NFL head coach, would put Julian Edelman in the Hall of Fame. Here's what he said on Fox.
When you look at the big moments and people go back and when they start talking about and voting for the Hall of Fame, I think he will be in the Hall of Fame because of those big moments and what he's been able to do in that position. And you know, he's done it as well as anybody ever in NFL history, I think.
Okay, so here's the thing. So this is, and you're right, Lou. This is when we had this conversation after that Super Bowl with those catches and all those plays that he was making. So you're sitting there going, okay,
love him.
You go to Eli Manning. Eli Manning. You look at his numbers, exaggerated as they will be, based on the fact that you know passing era played a long period of time. He's going to have good numbers, but you know, no one's going to put him as a top 10 quarterback of all time ever. Top 20? No. No one will ever put him in that category. I don't know. Who was a wide receiver like 2 years ago who lost their ever-loving mind when they were talking about Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer? They went crazy saying no. You know, based on – if you're judging it it is a fun discussion, though. Because it shows it shows just how important Super Bowls are. Right. And impact plays – belong in the Hall of Fame.
So you can look at it and say that in great sports moments, Julian Edelman should be in the great sports moment Hall
of
Fame.
It's another wing.
Right. The problem is this is the football Hall of Fame. He's never been elected as a Pro Bowl guy. Never.
All pro. It's never happened.
No. Nobody has ever gone to the Hall of Fame that I know of that has never been selected in a Pro Bowl. Never.
And again, it's like, and this is the problem, right? Because if you have these discussions, it's like, well, are you trashing him? Nope.
We're not trashing. I love
him. You
don't
trash a guy by saying that you love him. He's a Patriot Hall of Famer, and he had a great career. But again, he's not an NFL Hall of Famer. He's not. And if you go on Twitter right now, just put Edelman Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just everybody. Oh, there's no doubt. I don't care what anybody says. He's a Hall of Famer.
But you know what this is.
He's got 36 career touchdowns. He's a wide receiver. He's got 1,000 yards in his career 3 times. 100 catches twice. Very good. Very good. Regular season-wise, he and Wes Welker aren't even in the same boat. Wes Welker's numbers blow him away in the regular season, but he's got the postseason. He was a stud. He helped them win Super Bowls. God bless him. But it's just like, let's just appreciate his career, give him a red jacket, and move on, and stop with the Hall of Fame nonsense.
So this is the overreaction to the moment. And people love him, and people are looking at, it was a great career. He had phenomenal moments in the most important games for the New England Patriots. Nobody's going to ever take that away from him. But you can't sit here and try to convince us that he's a Hall of Famer in the league.
Yeah,
watch that tongue.
Oh, see that alone right there.
I love him. I think he's been great here.
Gotta watch that tongue again, I guess.
You gotta watch that tongue, Lou. Ooh, you're getting out of line, Lou. You smart ass. Yeah.
But he's a red jacket guy, no question about it. David in Watertown wants to chime in on Edelman. Go ahead, David.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. You know, I mean, the guy, all the props in the world, but I mean, he has more chance of having knee replacement than he does about, making it to the Hall of Fame. I mean, what this guy did for the Patriots, you guys are pro athletes. You know what he's been through. And Glenn, whenever you say bone on bone, that just sounds. that just sounds horrible, man. And if that's anything what he's got, I mean, what's in his future? A limp? You know what I mean? What do you guys think? I mean, this guy's...
Well, we don't know about that. I mean, he may be fine to deal with normal life. The question is, can he go at his age with the condition of his knee and try to play at the highest level of football? I'm not sure that's possible. But I am seeing it now that Lou mentioned it. A lot of these people, Adam Kaufman, Julian Edelman belongs in the NFL Hall of Fame, Patriots legend, all-time playoff performer.
Everybody hashtagging everything. Everybody.
He's not a Hall of Famer, guys.
I feel like you have to apologize.
I know,
when you
because
say
you
that.
Why
do
you have it's to almost apologize? Like you're putting him down.
Yeah,
he was a great player. Well, yeah. He was a great.
Well, we do all the time. It's like, listen, I don't think he's the greatest player of all time. He's second or third. Why do you hate him?
Yeah, no, because he may not be the greatest, but he could be the best, Lou. He could be the best,
greatest player of all time. It's like, that's disrespectful.
Yeah, bro.
Here's Mike, and let me go to Mike and Pepperell. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, I heard somebody earlier say that Troy Brown was better than Edelman, and I looked up the stats because I kind of knew it myself. But Edelman's got way more 1,000-yard seasons. He's got more 100-catch seasons than Troy Brown. Troy Brown was a good receiver, but you can't even put him in the league of Edelman.
No, I think Troy was great. Troy. No, Troy was like Troy was fantastic. Similar story too.
Edelman was better.
No, and my point is that you're right. The numbers aren't comparable. Who was more important and more impactful for the New England Patriots? Okay, was it Wes Welker? Was it Troy Brown? Or was it Julian Edelman? Okay, rank them with that in mind.
That's a long, tough question.
This is why people are talking about Edelman in the Hall of Fame, because you could make the serious argument that Wes Welker was a better overall player. He had a better resume, right, than those other two guys. On the other hand, what do you remember about Edelman? Because Wes Welker, you don't remember those post games, right?
A bad pass.
Jerry Rice said it all day long. Jerry Rice said Edelman is a beast. I heard that out of Jerry Rice's mouth.
Yeah.
And he dated Jerry Rice's
daughter. They're friends.
That's correct.
He's a little biased.
I would actually, as far as if you're talking about impact on wins and Super Bowls, it is Edelman 1, Troy Brown 2, and it is Wes Welker, Deion Branch 3, and then maybe Welker. Right. So let's not – Branch gets angry about this because it's almost like people forget that he was actually MVP. Even on the team. And, he did win an MVP also. Yeah. How about that? Huh? How about that? So they got some studs, but Edelman is just based on when he was drafted, how he had to fight for, being a defensive back – being a quarterback – I mean, did a lot of the same things that Troy did.
Yeah, so Welker gets hurt by the fact, because you look at the resume and you look at the numbers, then they're off the charts, that he played with the better offensive team, if you look at it, with Randy Moss. So he played with the better offensive team, and yet postseason, there were failures. And
Welker played on teams where, it was like Brady, go carry us. Like, we're not exactly going to have the best defense. The defense in transition those years, right? I mean, they had good teams, but it was just Brady go out and score 35, 37 points, and Welker was a huge part of that. I think Welker was a better player, than those guys. I just do. But, in the postseason, it's a different argument. Yeah, those teams, they couldn't get it done. Welker was part of that. So I don't know how you can avoid that. I understand. So Edelman's definitely number one, but when it comes to regular season, and you start talking about, like, Hall of Fame resume, out of those wide receivers you just mentioned, who's got the best Hall of Fame resume? Who's the better wide receiver, Welker or any Welker? Right,
Welker.
Better than all of them.
Welker would have the better shot. He's been in the Pro Bowl, but he would have a better shot. But the problem he has in this town is that one drop that you could question was a bad pass by Brady, but people are not going to forget that. And what does Edelman have? He has some phenomenal catches, including that one that brought them back in that 28-3 game where he caught it off the carpet.
Here's the thing, and I know we got a break, so we have a guest coming up, but I think it's less about the fact that he dropped that pass, but it's that he didn't have another one to make up for it.
Yeah.
So he didn't. So now he's fully known for that stinking drop, and that's it, which is insane, but what are you going to do?
All right, we'll talk more about Julian Edelman, get your 2 cents on where he ranks all-time for the New England Patriots coming up next at 617-779-7937, and we'll check back into Minneapolis and find out what's going on out there with the Red Sox postponement. All of that coming up in the final hour of OMF.